Welcome everyone to the Westprint Sports Review here on Planet FM 106.4, and this show is proudly brought to you by Westprint. They're based at 9 Pereri Street in New Lynn. Their number is 09 827 8531, and their email address is westprint.co.nz. For all your printing needs, get hold of Westprint. Good afternoon and welcome to the Westprint Sports Review here on Planet FM. And we're going to talk a bit of rugby league. And of course, we've got probably the best expert on it. He's a former Kiwis coach. He's a former Canterbury coach. He's a former Auckland Warriors before they were the New Zealand Warriors. He's Coach Wigan. He's Coach Widnes. He's done it all in rugby league. He's a life member of New Zealand Rugby League. And he's just come back from a very, very long flight from the Rugby League World Cup. Please welcome Mr. Frank Endicott. Frankie, how you going?
Tired, but well, and we got here safe, Eamon, which is the main thing.
Well, that was good, and of course, it sounds like you had a damn good time over in England for the Rugby League World Cup, so we might as well roll into it, Frank. The Rugby League World Cup, well, the Kangaroos were victorious over Samoa and proved, you know, despite all the late defections and players making themselves unavailable, that they are still the best team in the world. But for the Kiwis, really an opportunity that was missed. I looked at the match, Frank. I felt maybe we didn't. The keys around the substitutions weren't really. They missed a few opportunities to get Mossy Leota on because I felt he was effective. Felt Brandon Smith. Maybe they should have given him a spell earlier because he looked absolutely tired at the end of that match. Some of your thoughts from the Rugby League World Cup, Frank.
Well, the best team won, without any arguments at all, but the true hurry-up they did get was against the Kiwis, and to be quite honest with you, Eamon, I thought they were very unlucky to lose. They had chances to win. With the whole momentum of the game changed when the referee gave Australia two back-to-back penalties and they went the length of the field and then scored. And that was the difference. I thought New Zealand battled away very, very well. They didn't look cohesive in any game on the entire tour, but when it came to Australia, they really battled hard and, you know, could have just as easily come out with a win and maybe the World Cup, but it didn't happen. We'll have to wait till next time.
Yeah, we'll have to wait for next time, but overall it was quite a good tournament, some fantastic games, and of course then we hope that this Rugby League World Cup has revitalised international rugby league, but from a New Zealand perspective, it seems like the Kiwis are now in another holding pattern for an international window.
That's true. I think when you look at the World Cup now, the whole dynamics of the World Cup are changing in rugby league with the, you know, with Tonga and Samoa performing to such a high standard. I thought the, you know, over the last 5 years or so, the big disappointment in international rugby league has been Samoa. But in this tournament, they were the team that really shone out most. I mean, what they did was fantastic. I was actually at the game at Warrington when they played Tonga. Everyone was picking Tonga, but I'll tell you what, it was a fantastic game to watch, and Samoa deserved to win that match. They had two or three players that were really on fire in that game and continued on to the final even.
Yeah, because Jerome Luai, he was definitely on fire for them. Stephen Crichton was fantastic. You know, having that Penrith connection within the Tua Samoa side was, you know, really was a great advantage. And I personally believe it's great that these guys are able to represent their country, but the main thing is, and I know there was Mel Meninga wasn't particularly happy because there is calls to maybe review that rule, but what's your feeling about that?
Well, the rules change all the time, don't they? And I think that the Australians are trying to, you know, they'll change the rule to try and include those players in the state of origins because they want the best players playing in the state of origin. And, you know, it's worth a lot of money to the players too, I think about 50 grand for the series, so per player. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what they come up with. But at the end of the day, Australia is starting to get worried, as New Zealand should be, because a lot of these players are electing to make the decision to play for the island nation of their choice, and it's making them stronger, and I think they're going to get stronger, not weaker.
I'd have to agree with you there, Frank. Just so we'll look at the NRL season that has gone, and I've got to start off with the bad news. The worry is really another season, another coach gone, without sounding rude to the people that run the Warriors, a lot of rhetoric, a lot of condescending comments coming from Mount Smart. But it's, to me, the Warriors are an absolute concern this year for them. On the field, it probably wasn't great. Off the field, it was a publicity disaster.
Yeah, it was, and unfortunate. I remember on our first show at the start of the year, you asked me, as a couple of other stations asked me, where I thought the Warriors would finish, and I actually said 11th. They were all talking about, a lot of them were talking about top five, top six, and I said, no, I believe they'll finish around 11. So I wasn't far wrong. They had chances in the year, but their on-field rugby league wasn't great. And you're right, off the field, they've just got to get their act together. Good recruitment's needed. You got a new coach this year. He's not experienced as such and at first-grade head coach level, but, good on him, and he's got to be supported and given a go. So it's another wait-and-see year. I don't see enough changes to make it positive to get me thinking that they could make the eight. But time will tell.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because they have brought some decent buys, but they haven't really brought someone who, when looking at some of the signings, that's going to be a game changer for them and can turn their season from being contenders into being in that top eight, Frank.
No, and I think the same. You got a couple of fair players coming, but no absolute standouts that the team needs. You need game breakers. You need guys who can turn matches. I just don't see too many of them there. So I think too many of them play the same type of game. So it'll be an interesting year. I'd like to be real positive about it, but I'll make my decision where I think they'll finish up early next year.
Yeah, and we'll be talking about that hopefully early next year. Frank, just Penrith Panthers, fantastic this year. Really have been.
Credit to Ivan Cleary.
Oh, brilliant.
Brilliant coaching performance, brilliant team performance. People were going on about how cocky they were. Well, they deserve to be cocky. The rugby league that they played was exceptional. It's as good as I've ever seen any time in my lifetime. They're going to be tough again next year.
That's what I was going to ask you, Frank. Do you believe that they can go three in a row?
Yes, I do. I really do. I believe they can. Whether they do or not, time will tell. But they're good enough to. They're going to be right up there. I can see them in the final again for sure.
Yeah, because while they've lost a few players, they haven't lost a lot. And a lot of that nucleus of that team has been there for three or four seasons. So they've actually built not only a very good side, but a very good culture within their side.
They have, and there's also some very, very good young players coming through their system now. It'll be just about ready for first grade next year. So if you look at the grand finals, the club won over the this year. They've got plenty coming up, plenty. So some of those, if they could pick a second team that would beat a lot of the NRL first grade sides now.
I'd actually have to agree with you there, Frank, because there is such talent coming through, and Penrith has always been a real good nursery for young players coming through in the NRL around the Penrith St Mary's area.
They have, and that's where they come from. They've always had, and it seems to be the nursery seems to be getting stronger, not weaker. So they're doing a very good job at that club. I'm not sure who's there now behind the scenes with the development and the recruitment, but by gee, they're doing a great job. They don't look outside the club too far. Most of it's done within the club, and that says a lot for them. And good on them. They deserve all the success they get.
And I have to say, just looking at the NRL, which is the team you reckon is to watch? Which is the team that could come up and surprise us? Could, you know, we've got a new team in the Redcliffe Dolphins. Could they be a contender? Could obviously the Melbourne Storm are rebuilding. There's been a couple of good buys for the Roosters. Sharks are still there. What's some of your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, I think if you push me to say one team, I would say the Roosters. Brandon Smith going there is going to really help their chances. They're always competitive. And if you look over the last couple of years, they've had a lot of injuries to key players, and they've still been up there. So they only need a full year with minimal injuries, and they're going to be in that grand final at the end of the year. They'll be the team that could push Penrith.
I think you could be, you're onto something there, Frank. Just one other thing. Now, this was brought up in another radio show. I might as well name it. It was an SEN by Tony Kemp, and Tony Kemp won't mind me mention it. It was a mention about pathways for New Zealand coaches. Now, within New Zealand, we've got some great intellectual property, people like yourself, Blue McClenahan, John Acklin. But, you know, I've been thinking about what Tony Kemp has said, and I remember there used to be a rookie system done in the 80s where we sent promising players to be involved in what were known as NRL clubs. Could that be a pathway for, say, a young promising coach in New Zealand? Say they come under the tutelage of, say, Wayne Bennett, they come under the tutelage of Trent Robinson, Craig Bellamy, they get involved in, say, an SG Ball team?
Well, Tony Kemp's 100% right.
Yeah,
and I've been saying the same thing for a number of years, not just this year. That's the pathways for New Zealand coaches when I was Kiwi coach 20-odd years ago, or over 20 years, 25 years plus ago. We had a system of coaches that were coaching in what we had, the Lion Red Cup system, and the Barter Card Cup system, and a national competition. And the referees, the coaches, and the trainers, and the managers, they were all getting that great experience. And we had a list of coaches under myself, a top 10, that the one under me was junior Kiwi coach, and then the residence coach, blah, blah, and they moved their way up, and everyone accepted that. It was great. And we had 10 coaches that I believe could have coached in the NRL. So, you know, that's gone. So, you know, you've got to look outside the square, and I don't know who in New Zealand Rugby League is doing it. I don't think anyone's doing it, to be honest. But I agree with Tony Kemp, 100%. What we should do is earmark maybe our two best coaches in the country, or even three best, earmark them and send them to Australia and work under the top coach, three of the top coaches over there. I know Craig Bellamy would be right in line for that. It'd be my first choice. And, you know, Wayne Bennett and these fellas, you mentioned Trent Robinson, they'd be three great coaches for a young coach to get under. But that won't happen unless someone pushes them. And that's got to be done within a system. And that's where New Zealand Rugby League have really got to look out for that. Because, you know, in the World Cup, where were the New Zealand Rugby League referees? You know? They weren't there. We had the best coach in the tournament, I believe, but he's Australian. So you're right, we've got to do something for them. But it means that we used to have, I remember under Jim Doyle, we used to have what we called a think tank from the so-called rugby league brains from around the country. And they used to fly us up there, you know, once every couple of months, and we'd have a meeting and come up with things like this. But none of those things happen anymore. And that's the reason you haven't got player coaches at top level and referees.
I'd have to totally agree with you. And, you know, I had a look on the New Zealand Rugby League website, and I know some people within New Zealand Rugby League and Auckland Rugby League who I consider are good mates. But I don't see, you know, we need to develop our coaches because, take for example, the New Zealand Warriors. Now, before that, they were known as the Auckland Warriors. Now, full-time New Zealand coaches that have coached there that have been appointed, there's been yourself, Mark Graham, Tony Kemp, Bluey McClenahan. Now I know that Stacey helped out this year, Tony Iroh has stepped in, but there isn't really a pathway for New Zealand coaches within New Zealand, and it's not going to come through the Warriors.
No, I agree. I agree. But it should. Oh. You know, the it's just something that's grated me now for a few years, and, you know, I'm not sure who the high-performance coach in New Zealand Rugby League is. You might be able to tell me, because it's changed so many times.
Well.
But that would be something that he could do. As high-performance coach, work a pathway out for some of these blokes. But I'm not sure who it is at the moment. I must check.
Well, I'll tell you what, you've got me thinking for next year, Mr. Endicott, that I'm going to get someone from New Zealand Rugby League, and I might even get you on as a guest as well, too, to ask those questions. Because the simple reason is that if you're a young, promising coach, whether you're in Auckland, whether you're in Wellington, whether you're in Canterbury, whether you're in Waikato or the Bay of Plenty, you've got to see some options for you. And if it means a year away learning from the best in the NRL, that's not only going to help them develop as a coach, it's going to help the future of New Zealand Rugby League. Well, Frank, I'm going to say this to you. I wish you all the best for you and your family for Christmas. I hope to try and catch up with you when I'm down in Christchurch. And we hope we can keep this going for next season.
Well, thanks very much, Eamon, and a happy new year to everyone, to you and all your listeners also, mate. Look forward to catching up with you.
I'm looking forward to catching up. I better go and see the bank manager for the loan.
Good on you, mate. You'll need it.
Like the legend of the phoenix, all ends with beginnings. What keeps the planet spinning? The force from the beginning. Love.
We've come too far to give up. To get some, she's up all night for good fun. I'm up all night to get lucky. We're up all night to the sun. We're up all night to get some. We're up all night for good fun. We're up all night to get lucky. 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 We're up all night to get lucky.
Present has no ribbon. Your gift keeps on giving. What is this I'm feeling? If you wanna leave, I'm with it.
night to get lucky. We're up all 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 night to get lucky.
Welcome everyone back to the Westprint Sports Review here on Planet FM, and now we are reunited. We haven't spoke to had all three of us together in well over a year. Beside me in studio is the Silver Tongue, Silver Fox, Sean Summerfield, and of course on the phone lines is the man, the legend, Mark Watson. Welcome to the show, both of you.
Still socially distanced, Mark.
Yeah, well, we're trying to, you know, it's hard. He's already winding me up.
I know, welcome. Good to be back. Lovely to chat to you boys.
Ian, it's great to have you back, and of course it's been a hell of a year in New Zealand sports, and you know, we're gonna kick off with yourself, Mark. What's been some of your highlights and some of your lowlights of that year?
Oh, look, I think you go right back to the start of the year. It has to be Zoe Sadowski-Sinnott, I think, winning New Zealand's first ever Winter Olympics Games gold medal, also picking up a bronze. I don't think that should be lost on people in regards to that particular achievement. You know, they're not easy to win. The fact that, you know, really, at what, our first Winter Olympics, I think, was, what, 1992 in Lillehammer. So I think that's probably the real highlight for me. Disappointments, clearly the All Blacks, I think it's a failed season. I just don't think you lose a series to Ireland here. You don't lose to Argentina at home. Certainly the Commonwealth Games was another highlight. I think right across the board there were some wonderful achievements within that. Clearly the Women's Rugby World Cup. I thought that semi-final and final were just a wonderful showcase for women's rugby, what the product can provide. I guess the challenge going forward is how they capitalise on that and what they do to try and maintain that sort of momentum. We've still got the Softball World Championships to come, so looking forward to that. Hopefully the boys can go and win their eighth title. And so, yeah, we're on all of another pretty strong year. We shouldn't probably forget Lisa Carrington. It's easy to forget Lisa Carrington. She won more world championships this year, and everyone goes sort of almost forgets about that, but we should be celebrating the fact she's so dominant. You know, I don't think that Switzerland ever sort of diminished the achievements of Roger Federer, and the United States never diminished the achievements of Tiger Woods. Just because you dominate a sport, it doesn't mean that for some reason it's easy and that, oh, I'm a little bit bored with that, and why don't we sort of spread the love somewhere else? So, all in all, a pretty good year.
I think there was actually a Freudian slip there from Amy at the start. He asked you all your highlights and low lifes. And I thought, you know, there has been some pretty poor moments of the year, Mark, and I don't want to wind you up too much, but the whole All Black, you mentioned the All Blacks and disappointment, I'm with you too, because I was stoked for Ireland. I think Australia were unlucky, and probably the luckiest thing of the year was the All Blacks didn't have to play France, and God help us next year. But the whole fiasco with the coaching and what went on, what was your take on that?
Oh, just poor administration, I think, to be perfectly honest. Look, I don't think anybody ever believed Ian Foster was the right guy. But when it was all said and done, and I remember saying this years ago, when it was all said and done, he was always going to get that job. A lot of excuses have been made that, look, he just doesn't have the player depth. And I'm like, well, hang on a minute. So you're telling me first time in 130-odd years by coincidence, just don't happen to have the player depth. Well, you can ask yourself why. You know, you can go back to the previous administration, look at the damage they've done at a club level, at a Mitre 10 Cup level, and now at a Super Rugby level. But, yeah, look, when it came down to that whole coaching debacle, Ian Foster should have gone. It's all very well to get rid of the two assistants. So does that mean if this All Black team suddenly improves that we should be saying, hey, hang on a minute, this is Joe Schmidt's team, this is Jason Ryan's team? Because if you're going to hold the two assistant coaches accountable for the failures, and then suddenly the team's turned around, then surely you've got to give the praise to the two new assistant coaches. But yeah, look, I just generally think the whole administration of New Zealand rugby's just a debacle. I'm not sure that Mark Robinson's the right guy. They said that they went around the world and did their due diligence, but I think the rumours and whispers were out there that this guy was always going to get that job, not dissimilar to Ian Foster getting the All Black job. And I've never, ever seen rugby in a, from an administration point of view, from a playing point of view, and from a structural point of view, ever been so weak or so poor.
You can actually segue there, because the last time I think there was this poor an effort, and there's been a few, let's be honest, from NZR over the years, unnecessarily so, was back in 2001 when Wayne Smith, in a moment of sort of candor, he said, man, am I the right person for the job? That person went and basically blabbed that to the board. Then next thing he said, no, I am. I just was expressing my my state after we lost to Aussie. And next thing, he's fighting for his job, lost his job. Yeah. And how great, because you mentioned the Black Ferns, all of them are amazing. One of the best sporting events I've been to in my life. I was so lucky to be there with my family to see those Wahine Toa do what they did. But for Wayne Smith, that was the happiest thing for me. Because he, to me, I know they call him the professor, but he's a seriously a beautiful man. And I was so stoked for that.
I would have to...
Oh, look, I think... Yeah. Sorry,
you go in, Mark.
I was just going to say, look, he's the best coach in the world, isn't he? And I think it's more than coincidence that when he left the environment and the setup of Steve Hansen and Ian Foster, when was it, 2017, 2018, you know, you saw a noticeable decline in the All Blacks' performance on the field. And the guy is a guru. I think he was exactly the right guy to come in and take over the women's team after a sort of another pretty turbulent sort of shake-up. He's a guy that just has respect, doesn't he? I mean, pretty hard for any player to sort of play up with Wayne Smith. He doesn't tolerate fools. He's been around. And, you know, he's a coach that you just want to play for. He's a coach that you just want to be the best you can possibly be for you. He sets a standard and you want to lift to that standard.
I'd have to agree with you there, Mark. And one of the things Wayne Smith does bring to it, he's a fantastic man or person manager. He's also a great communicator. And that, you know, you have a coach that communicates what he needs, is so important in today's environment.
What's under that? He's actually a good man.
He's a very, very good man.
And that's where it comes from.
And I'm going to bring this one up to you. The last time we had a World Cup in 2011 here, it was a Henry Hansen and Smith coaching duo. And guess what we had? A Smith, Hansen and Henry coaching duo.
That's a good observation. Yes. And amazing too, when Hansen, she said, I'm not ready to take on that job. And isn't it refreshing to hear that honesty from people instead of just being so scared to say no because they might not get another chance?
Yeah. Anyway, we must keep it going on. Like, take for instance, Sean, you probably had a few highlights this year yourself.
Oh, I share a lot with Watto, and he's actually summed it up. I mean, it seems a long time ago, so he's at Aski Center, but amazing stuff. And I remember Annalise Schoberger way back in the early 90s. It's incredible because, yes, we have mountains and snow, but it isn't what they need to do what they do overseas. And I think it's phenomenal what all our sort of winter athletes have done. But she's just incredible and so young as well, which is just awesome. But obviously, you know, I love my petrol, so there's been a few highlights. And, you know, Rally New Zealand was amazing to have that event back here, a truly international event. The Kelly Rovan Pera, the world champion, was crowned here, the youngest world champion. I was actually on the podium presenting the winners back in the early 2000s when his dad finished second. So I felt bloody old. But that was incredible. And what we saw from Hayden Paddon, showing how good he is and why he deserves to be back at the top game. And then that bloke, Shane Van Gisbergen, who turned up in a rally car, finished in the top 10 in a world event, drove a fantastic rally just a couple of weeks after winning the Pukekohe, winning the Jason Richards, farewelling that track. I'll touch on that in a moment. Then he goes and does Bathurst. I mean, just nothing short of incredible. And we've said it many times, he is the most naturally gifted driver on the planet. And if that wasn't awesome enough, where Scott Dixon was fighting for the IndyCar title, Scott McLaughlin was phenomenal. Liam Lawson finished third in Formula 2. Now, I'm gutted he hasn't you know, he's had just done, I think, 100 and something laps he did in the Red Bull yesterday in the postseason. But I think, for me, it would have been great if he had got a chance to be part of a team. But I think better to be part of racing in the Super Formula in Japan than be the third driver in Formula One, where you just, the chance of you racing is pretty tiny now that COVID's gone.
Just on that, Sean, you know, the chances of, say, Liam Lawson, you know, in the future getting a drive in F1, that still is a high possibility.
It's better than the lotto ticket I buy. But, look, it's a tough game. There is so much talent there. There is so much money there. And I've said it, I'll say it till I die with this dough, this go. But Liam's got it. Look, sometimes I wonder if it's tempting for a driver to do more off the track than on the track. And then they're measured for how often they stand on the podium, not how good they were at doing some testing. And yes, you can do this with a Formula One car. You're racing Formula Two, you've got to win those races. So that's the sort of that side of it there. That said, though, great year for him. And I want to mention a couple others. Marcus Armstrong could be off to IndyCar. It would be amazing, joining the other two Kiwis. Brendan Hartley has just won his third World Endurance Championship to go with his third Le Mans. That's amazing. And the other thing, too, that happened this year, Richie Stanaway, who is a phenomenally talented young driver. He's had a really tough time. And for him and Murph to get to Bathurst and do as well as they did was just awesome. And that's back to those things of why sport's incredible. And I'm going to out myself here. Before I start bitching about Rico Ioane, why is he in the centre? Anyway, big, great soccer on TV at the moment, great football on TV at the moment. I don't know if you're enjoying it too, Mark, but it is some of the best football I've seen. It's Wrexham. It's not Qatar.
No. Look, we've all got our favourite teams, haven't we? But, just want to reiterate first what you said about motorsport. As I've said previously, I don't think motorsport's ever been in a healthier place in this country than maybe since the 1960s. It's a little unfortunate that, you know, everybody tends to say, well, unless you're driving in Formula One, for some reason you maybe can't be that good. I mean, the Brendan Hartley situation, you know, is this guy going to ended up getting nominated for a Hellberg Award? No, he's not, because, you know, our media just don't do the due diligence and just don't give these guys the respect they deserve. Moving on to the FIFA Football World Cup or Football or Wrexham. I love this time of year. I go right back to 1978. Remember Mario Kempes and Ozzie Ardiles, and then 1982 with the likes of Paolo Rossi and Dino Zoff, and of course the All Whites there. And always remember 86 with the Hand of God, and then Maradona, and I think it was Jose Luis Brown, the man with the Irish descent, I think was a piece of commentary when he scored the first goal in that Football World Cup in 86. And it's been a big part of my life, and I do thoroughly enjoy the Football World Cup. Great to see these smaller countries tipping up the likes of Germany and Argentina. It just gives all of those other smaller nations just that little bit of hope that, hey, it can be done. And just the sense of nationalism that goes with football more so than anything globally, I mean, you know, ice hockey's big in Canada, but football's big everywhere in every country. And to do something on the world stage is just simply remarkable. So, you know, really looking forward to the weeks coming with the football.
I'd have to both agree with you. You know, this, you have a look at it, the Football World Cup. It's still, you know, I remember those days of Paolo Rossi and the hat trick against Brazil, the best team in the world in 1982 being Brazil, and of course the Tardelli scream in the final against West Germany. Just, we might as well just get to it right now. If we can all give us your sports team of the year, I'll start off with you, Mark.
Oh, look, I think you're going to have to give it to the Black Ferns, aren't you? I think that semi-final against France was fantastic, and then it took another step up against England. Oh, look, I think any time you beat England in rugby, whether it be in the guys or the girls, it's just a beautiful thing. That they brought some nationalism to this country, and it's been a really tough couple of years here. So, look, I think without doubt it has to be the Black Ferns when it comes to Team of the Year.
Yeah, if you're thinking oval ball, there's no competition for what that was and the way it felt to be there and what they did for sport, everything that was good about sport. And Ruby Tui, man, she's just the best. second best rugby team in New Zealand was Ireland.
Well, hang on. There'll be people from where you live and where I live would debate that. But anyway, we might as well. Well, my team of the year, I'm going to have to agree with you guys. Black Ferns all the way. They not only was the rugby great to watch, it was the atmosphere, it was the actual, you know, the positivity you brought into the country.
You know what? Actually, can I say something? I don't want to be grumpy here because that's Mark's job.
Yeah,
sorry, Mark. I'm sick of feeling like I've got to justify saying that I loved watching the Black Ferns. And I'm sick of having, when someone, I've told a friend the other day, oh, but how does it compare to how the men play, and are they as good as the All Blacks were in 87? I'm like, what are you on about? I'm not comparing it to that. I'm just looking at that game in itself was a brilliant final. It had all the ingredients, and I mean, the level of skill is in passing game's phenomenal. Wasn't a great kicking game. I mean, the way that the English mauled was phenomenal. In fact, I thought for a while the All Blacks, I was trying to think, what are they like trying to stop that maul? It was like their poor bloke in Tiananmen Square trying to stop the tanks. That's what it was like. I just couldn't, you know, I just thought, I don't want to compare it. I just think it's its own game, and it was bloody awesome. Sorry, I'll just get off my hobby horse.
Yeah, no, but Sean, jumping in there, look, one thing that disappointed me was how the media tried to politicise the women's rugby the whole time. There was always this, they were the ones that were always comparing it with the men's game. They always continue to play this flavour of oppression, that the only relationship ever between men and women's been one of sort of dominance, and this is the best product in the world. And it's like, no, they're both really good product. The All Blacks have had 130 years to establish their history. Let's not draw comparisons. Let's just enjoy it for what it is, guys, because the more they went down that path, the more it annoyed me. The more I was told I had to watch it, the more it actually just switched me off.
Exactly.
You know, the best thing for that game was the semi-final and the final. Just let this organically grow. Don't go and overinflate the economy. There's still some challenges for the game to come, and it's going to be interesting to see how they do capitalise on it. Don't come out the next day and say the women's referee in the final got every single call right with some sort of underlying she was better than the men type angle. Just leave all that stuff alone. I've just sort of had enough of it all. And then trying to sort of work out and say, look, the women should have pay parity with the men. And it's like, guys, this is just basic economics. It doesn't work like that. And that, I've got to say, did ruin it a little bit for me. But I'm pleased that, you know, I think these days wise enough just to enjoy the rugby for what it was, come semi-final time.
You did on, and it's funny, you talk about the noise. That was the thing that was annoying. So too was the noise of the shit sound system at Eden Park.
Oh, yeah.
That was an absolute letdown. But, I mean, when Benny, the way they did the fact, Benny was in that spot, she came and played, bang, there was no stage to take off the field. They set a template for how it should be done. That said, though, the way the media were trying to sort of politicise it frustrated the heck out of me, because they said, oh, it was a sold-out Eden Park. It wasn't sold out.
No.
There was areas, and that's fine. I don't care. But you don't say what it's not. Say what it is. And it was bloody awesome.
And if I can...
Yeah, and look, and if it was 25 to 30,000, that is still 20,000 more than they had 10 years ago. So let's just, as you say, celebrate for what it is. And, you know, but also at the same time, you know, the tickets were $10 to get in. It was $5 for kids. It was great value. And one of my arguments at the end of it was, you know, I kept going on about parity. Well, if you want parity, make the All Black games $10. Make the kids games, you know, $5 to get in. But yeah, look, you know, and you ended up sort of getting into that game a little bit because the media, you know, just kept firing these sort of, I hate to say it, but these feminist shots constantly back across it. And, you know, and if somehow you disagree, you're made to sort of feel like a little bit of a misogynist or a sexist or something. And no, it's not. I'm just past this stuff. I'm just over this. I just want to get on. I just want to enjoy it for what it is.
Yeah, just because it wasn't needed. It was, they were doing something great, and I didn't believe it needed to be about gender or anything. I thought it was just an awesome event, awesome sport, awesome drama, awesome tension. It was everything you want in a sporting event, and all you had to do was look at it like that. But, yeah, it was the whole politicising of stuff. And, look, we've known for decades, politics and sport, sometimes they have to be uncomfortable bedfellows, but they're best separated, like we can see in Qatar right now, for God's sakes.
Yeah. Okay, I'll just jump in there, guys. Just on one thing about this World Cup, I'll just say this, and it, I enjoyed the whole tournament. I felt that, you know, some of the tournament was run well. The TV coverage, I'll be straight to the point, because I watched a bit of it on Spark and on TV3. I felt at times some of the commentary was good, but I'll say this to you, because both of you have been on TV, both of you have been produced TV. Why do we have to always put someone out there who becomes a cheerleader, who, when they're doing an interview, why do we have to have that? Why do they have to try and be funny? Now, I'm not going to mention the name. I think you both can work it out who I'm talking about. But it was just some of it, it was quite sickening to watch.
Yeah, but we do that with the men's game too.
It's terrible.
With sport, I mean, people are scared to call, we'll say the Emperor's got no clothes on. And sometimes the Emperor is stark naked and getting frostbite on his backside, but they don't ever say it.
But it just comes back to this wokeness. It just comes back to this identity politics. It's all a box-ticking exercise. Everybody's too easily offended. Half these media organisations are basically PR firms for, you know, rugby. And it's really, really hard. The America's Cup was the same on Television One. I mean, the pre-racing stuff and the post-racing stuff was just a group of people, I think, who were more interested in their Instagram followers than actually bringing any sort of credibility to it.
And yeah, absolutely.
And it is actually just cringeworthy, you know. And no one's watching it, but it's an opportunity to sell another hour worth of advertising. And it actually just does the product a bit of a disservice.
Anyway, on that, who is our Sports Poop Man of the Year?
Oh, I think you'd probably have to go pretty close to Aaron Gate, wouldn't you, for his achievements at the Commonwealth Games in cycling, winning the road race and also winning multiple track cycling gold medals. Is not an easy thing. They're two very, very different sports. Look, it is Commonwealth Games, so it's not the World Championships. We've still got Hayden Wild racing tomorrow in Abu Dhabi, and he could potentially win the World Championships off that race, which will be first time since Bevan Doherty back in 2004 when he won in Madeira in Portugal. So I don't think we should underestimate that. I think any time Stephen Adams goes out and plays in the NBA, you've got to pretty much go Stephen Adams is the man. We underestimate just how big that sport is globally, how few places there are in the NBA. And here is a guy week in, week out, doing it at the highest level and as a bit of a rock star.
Yeah, to hear his latest one. He said he can't believe that Americans like turkey on Thanksgiving. It's too dry.
He is. Sean, who's your sports person or man?
I'm going to have to stick with Four Wheels and I have to say the Giz, really. It's just the absolute domination of what he did in Rally New Zealand. Yeah, you know when the Halbergs come out, I think Hartley will be in that not quite the long list, mate, but not the shortest list. That'll be there. But I reckon Van Gisbergen will be a finalist, Mark.
Yeah, look, I think the fact he won the double two, he won Bathurst, it's just whether you look at it and say, well, okay. But, you know, no, people might diminish it and go, well, it's only sort of world famous really in Australia and New Zealand, and whether that's right or not, that might be the perception by some. But then you can turn around and go, well, look, hang on a minute, you could say really the same about that Women's Rugby World Cup. If you want to play that game, let's be honest, there were three countries that can realistically only win that World Cup, and that was proven. So look, I've got no problem with Van Gisbergen, and if he's right there in the mix and he was to end up getting it over Aaron Gate. We've also got a young man that clearly won another Olympic medal earlier in the year in the gold as well, so we shouldn't underestimate that, the Winter Olympics. Sorry, I'm just having a mind block.
What do you reckon, though? I'm just thinking, do you go Lisa or Zoe for the Women of the Year?
I would.
You'd have to go Zoe Sadowski. Yeah, Olympic Games gold medal, full stop. As I said, we haven't won many, and there's a reason why, because it's that damn hard. So if you're asking me who gets it overall, I'm going Zoe
Sadowski. Black Ferns will win Team of the Year.
There's no way anybody should take it off Zoe Sadowski Center.
Ruby Tui will be the Sports Personality of the Year, and Coach of the Year is easy, Wayne Smith.
I'm going to give you more.
I'll never be a Hellbergs judge.
I don't think you'll make the cut. I don't think I'll make the cut because, I'll probably go for Nico Porteous. But I'm actually going to give a shout-out. I think Hayden Wild, and Mark, you'd probably agree with me, is going to be a dominant sports figure for the next 10 years in our sporting landscape. And his rivalry with Alex Yee in triathlon is triathlon's equivalent of Borg and McEnroe.
Yeah, look, sport needs its rivalries. I think you'll see Yee. I think you'll see these guys come Paris, I think it'll be Hayden Wild's time. I think he'll be stronger. I think he'll be more experienced. He just won the Triathlon Super League. If he wins tomorrow night, I think he pretty much wins the World Triathlon Crown. He's already won the Xterra World Championships. But, yeah, look, just going back, I mean, we shouldn't probably rule out Nico Porteous for winning the men's, to be perfectly honest. When I look at it in context, it is Olympic Games. It is a gold medal. It is the Winter Olympics. It was right at the start of the year, so it's probably lost on a lot of people now, and we're a little bit fickle, you know, whatever sort of an hour, you know, the media tend to drive a lot of it. But look, I think when you're talking about Aaron Gate, you're talking about Nico Porteous, you're talking about Shane Van Gisbergen, I think, again, it just sort of reflects what a hell of a year we've had.
I'd have to agree with you there, Mark. Just some of my lowlifes of the year, I just never got back to it, but would have been just the behaviour and the rhetoric of a couple of organisations, New Zealand Warriors, and the way that they handle not only on the field, but off the field, their handling of some of their players, their condescending remarks to the sports media, New Zealand Football with the whole Danny Hay thing was a complete disaster. Now you've got basically our top players who are based in Europe basically battling the board of New Zealand Football. So there were some of my real lowlifes of this year.
Yeah, well, it's not going to get any different next year for the Warriors. We'll have all the rhetoric. We'll have all the hype. Don't underrate us. Oh, the top Australian pundits haven't picked us. We're not concerned by that. We'll do our talking on the field and it'll just end up being another bloody disaster, mate, because until they make some fundamental shifts and changes there, you just can't put back in what God left out.
I'm going to use Eamon's line here. I have to agree with you there, Mark.
It's stealing my lines, Mark.
That's it, though, isn't it?
He is absolutely winding me up today. He's come in and he's just turned to see... He basically has said... Wind up Eamon and wind up Mark today. Anyway, let's get on to our predictions for 2023. We might as well start off with you, Mark, because myself and Sean have a pint of Guinness wager on this.
Okay, well, I've already said the Warriors will be a disaster. The All Blacks will go out in the quarterfinals to either France or South Africa, because that's the way it's going to play out. And then this last 3 years of saying it's okay to sacrifice All Black games in the name of winning the Rugby World Cup and rest and rotating, that'll just be again proven to be just an absolute fallacy and just PowerPoint presentation crap. 2023, year out from the Olympic Games. I'm just trying to work out. I mean, Lydia Ko, I think, will win a major championship next year. Great year from Lydia Ko, but I think she'll go on and win her third major championship next year, possibly even pick up a couple. I think that's the only thing that she really didn't do this year, other than having a stunning year there. Look, I think Ryan Fox could even do something at a major championship or at a players' championship that is, you know, maybe in the footsteps of someone like a Craig Perks. I think Shane Van Gisbergen will just do what Shane Van Gisbergen's done. And I think genuinely Scotty McLaughlin, or I think next year will genuinely challenge for that IndyCar series, you know, not sort of sitting fifth or sixth, but right in the mix from day one, right up there. And wouldn't be surprised if one of those two drivers ends up winning the Indianapolis 500. So there's a couple for you, a couple of crystal ball gazing.
I wish I'd gone first. That's so good. He's dead on. Actually, yeah, and I think, I think you're dead on with those two great Scots. That'd be awesome. I'd love to see Hayden Padden getting a call up to a WRC round, absolutely winning WRC2. That would be amazing. I can't believe I'm saying this, but I think the Blues could do it next year. I and that hurts me to say that, Eamon. It really does. But I enjoyed watching this year.
I tell you what.
Well, it's not going to help the All Blacks of the World Cup if they don't realise that Rico is a winger. If he's not good enough to be a starting winger, then don't start him at centre. I don't think Sam Kane is the man to be at the World Cup to lead us there. And I just hope the walking frames are fast enough for our locks, because we're going to need that there. But that's sort of where I'm at. It's hard to argue with much else. It's funny, you talk about disappointments this year. Back to Formula One. Ferrari started so well and disappeared. I'd love to see them pull something out next year, because that just, it's getting a little bit boring. I need a red car in front again with that. And but otherwise, he's dead on. Watto's done it.
Okay, well, I'll give you my prediction. Trish is going to be completely different. The All Blacks will make the World Cup final. They'll lose. Arsenal will win the EPL.
Who will beat them?
It'll either be France or England. That's who I'm picking to win that World Cup, because believe me, at the moment, this World Cup is a lottery. So that's where it's at. I'm also going to put some other predictions. Arsenal to win the EPL. And I'm going to give you a name which some of you may have heard of to win a boxing world title. His name is David Light. He's got a fight in December the 7th. Now, if he wins this fight, he can challenge for one of the cruiserweight titles of the world. I believe it's the WBO. And this guy's a good boxer. He's flown under the radar. I believe that he'll probably will pick up a world champion.
Actually, Mark, you know, just think about the Rugby World Cup. The fact that we're sort of not expecting great things from the All Blacks, to counter that, this is the first World Cup we're going into where Australia are actually better than people might realise.
Yeah, that's right.
South Africa, Ireland, Scotland are playing beyond themselves. France, Argentina can knock over teams. Then you've got England. This is the best lot of top teams we've had at a World Cup in the history of the game. I think that's just fantastic. And I'm still liking to see those Samoan flags on every car as I drive around Auckland. I think that deserves a bit of applause, what they did.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant, that World Cup. And I've been out in Papakura doing some futsal commentary, and it was amazing just how many cars and stuff had the old flags on them. Look, just going to that Rugby World Cup draw is an interesting one. Quarter-final tie, top four countries
basically
in the world
have gone.
So you've got Ireland, New Zealand, France and South Africa all on the one side of the draw. Those four teams will probably end up playing some sort of mix in the quarterfinals. On the other side of it, you've got Australia, Wales, England, Argentina. I mean, they've got a pretty soft draw, to be fair. So you talk about Australia. I mean, they are the dark horse. And it's been proven anybody gets on a bit of a run. Australia, they've just shown on the end of this Northern Hemisphere tour, they came very close against Ireland. They came very close against France. They are capable on their day.
And they've got an amazing coach.
Yeah, I think Dave Reed is a good coach.
Oh, come on, mate. New Zealand rugby never rated him. Mind you, they never rated Jamie Joseph or Tony Brown. I mean, because the only people they ever rated, mate, was themselves, Steve Hansen, and then Ian Foster. I mean, they didn't even rate Gordon Titchens, did they? I mean, honestly, mate, that's half the problem, isn't it? We've got a moron coaching our All Black team, and I only mean that as a coach, not as a person. And then we've got all these other wonderful coaches just off overseas giving all of our intellectual property away, and somehow we think we need to retain Sam Kane over our coaches, and we wonder why we're in a world of trouble. It is absolutely beyond me.
I wasn't trying to wind him up. Don't even look at me like...
No, do you know what, Mark? I totally agree with you. But do you know what the concerning part is? And this is where... If, say, Foster makes a World Cup final, now this is where New Zealand rugby have got to show a bit of...
It'll be the Ricky Herbert factor.
Hold on, Sean. This is where, for goodness sake, don't reappoint him. New Zealand rugby needs to make a decision on who the future coach is for 2024. And to be honest with you, they've got to do this unprecedented. They've got to start, they have to announce it sometime early next year who the next All Black coach is, because if we are, because it's likely we could miss out on Razor Robinson. I don't believe personally he's the guy to lead it. My personal choice would be a Jamie Joseph. I don't think we're going to get him.
Actually, you know what, on that... If they did that, you might actually see the best from Ian Foster and his team. Weight's off. He's got nothing left to prove. He knows his time's finite, and it's $1 million a year job. Mate, just enjoy it while it's there. You might actually see the best from him, because he can just coach.
Yeah, look. If we were to go on and win this Rugby World Cup, I'm going to say this right now, it's Joe Schmidt's team, it's not Ian Foster's team that wins the World Cup. Ian Foster's not capable of winning a World Cup. He's proven that, and, you know, he's very lucky. I mean, look at the resource they've got around them too. But I just want to go back to Sean, one of Sean's comments. I'm big with you, Sean, on this one about Rico Iwane. The guy is a winger, he's not a centre. The moment he's got players moving in front of him, he gets found out. Defensively, just not good enough. Doesn't know how to feed his outside backs. And look, equally too, I'm not convinced, and I know that he draws defenders and you've got to put two players on him. And I'm a man of a grammar old boy, but yeah, not convinced either on Clark on the wing.
Can I say something about Clark, though? And I know, look, I know that, I would actually swap him and Rico. I reckon they should teach him to be a centre, and because Clarks aren't bad in the midfield, and I reckon that's where he'd be great.
Anyway, yep, I'd have to agree with you there, Sean, and I think it's been an interesting year next year. First of all, I want to thank both of you gentlemen, Sean, first of all, for coming in studio, Mark, for coming online, and I'd like to wish both of you a happy, all the best for Christmas and New Year's.
Thank you.
Cheers.
I can't have a new year. Ian Foster's still all black coach. How can I possibly be happy?
Anyway, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much. Cheers. Cheers, what a...
Oh, no worries, man. All good, boys. Have a good one.
Cheers, brother. Cheers. Take care.
Well, I'd like to wish everyone a happy new year and all the best for 2023, and we'll see you on the other side. I'd like to thank all the team here at Planet FM. So all the best for 2023. It's Eamon Hallisey signing out.
Australia.